Hi there, fellow ocean enthusiast. My name's Lauren, and I'm a second year marine biology and coastal ecology student at Plymouth University. And this is Plymouth Beneath the Surface. Throughout history, Plymouth has been well known as being the starting point for many famous voyages and discoveries, and acted as a honeypot to marine biologists from around the world. Come on board with me and meet people from Plymouth that have orientated their lives around the ocean. Scientists, divers, photographers, students, NGO members, artists, and many more. Learn about the ocean, discuss current topics, local conservation initiatives, and find out why Plymouth really is the best place in the world to study and work in the field of marine biology. Hi everyone, and welcome to the first episode of the new season of Plymouth Beneath the Surface. Our first guest is somebody who, if you tuned in during season one, you'll know really, really well. It's the amazing Louise De Leon. Hi, Louise. How are you?
Hey, Lauren. I'm good. Thank you. And thanks for having me. It's good to be on the other side for once.
Yeah, I was going to say, I bet it feels a bit strange, to be fair.
Yeah, I don't really realise it's for the same podcast, but I'm glad.
Yeah, no, it's a nice little kind of round off your time on the podcast, I thought. So just in case people haven't listened to Plymouth Beneath the Surface before, I wondered if you could just briefly introduce yourself.
Yeah, sure. So I was a student in Plymouth. I was doing marine biology and coastal ecology at the University of Plymouth. I'm French originally, and I moved to Plymouth to do my degree. And while I was in my third year, I created the podcast that you're now listening to. So yeah, with the aim to talk to loads of different people from Plymouth that are doing marine biology or marine conservation, and try to sort of raise awareness about the different topics about the ocean, as well as the different career paths that you could take as a student.
No, absolutely. I think that's a pretty good summary, to be fair. My first question to you is, why marine biology? Was it something that you always wanted to do, or did you change paths, anything like that, really?
I wanted to be a marine biologist, I think, quite early on, without really knowing. It was, you know, marine biology. I was really good at science, and I did a few holidays to Hawaii, where I was lucky enough to, you know, be so close to marine wildlife. And so when I saw all of these animals, and also knowing how endangered the ocean and its ecosystems were, I was like, I really want to do something about it. And so I think it just became, that's when I was like, okay, I want to study marine biology. But you can't do marine biology in France as a bachelor. You can only do biology. So then I was like, okay, I'm going to do biology, and then, you know, do marine biology in a master's.
Yeah, no, that's crazy. I didn't know that, you know.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the reason why I came to Plymouth, is because I really wanted to do marine biology and not just biology. So that's why I moved to England, because I couldn't do it in France.
Oh, wow. Okay, yeah. I was surprised at that, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, it's not the only reason, but, I mean, Plymouth is also a really great place, and I wanted to learn English, so all these things together make me come.
So did you only learn English when you actually came to Plymouth?
Well, I did English at school, but I wasn't fluent at all, and I had to do some English tests before I came to England. But then I thought I was quite good at English, and then I came to Plymouth and I was like, oh my God, I need to practice.
Yeah, yeah.
So I actually learned, I think, English. The way I speak now is because of my time in Plymouth, definitely.
Yeah, I can't imagine, to be honest, because I know myself how hard it is to write, you know, a kind of scientific writing. etc. It must have been really difficult at the start to, you know, learn a different language and also the scientific terminology as well, because that's a different language in itself sometimes, I think.
Yes, and I remember my first lecture for those, I mean, I don't know if it has changed, but my first lecture was with Michael Cunliffe on marine microbiology, and it was a 2-hour long lecture. And I remember getting out of the lecture theatre and being like, what the fuck? Like, I didn't get a word of what he just said.
No, I felt the same way, weirdly. It's kind of like dinoflagellates, plankton, this, that and the other, all being thrown around, words that were completely new.
Exactly. And the first piece of coursework I had to do was writing an essay. And Pete Cotton, who was my tutor, and I was so scared of having to write in English. And actually now reading the first essay I wrote back then, it's actually quite funny to read.
Yeah, no, I bet. At least you can kind of directly mark your progress over that time. So
yeah, completely.
What did you end up doing for your dissertation then? So you started off writing an essay, first semester sort of thing. What did you end up doing?
So during my placement year, I did two different internships, and one of them was in Chile in South America. And I was part of a research group there doing kelp ecology. Wow. So I was diving in kelp forests most of the time, and we're just like collecting data on different aspects of the ecosystem and the kelp itself. And basically in Chile, kelp is being harvested. So basically it's being removed from the water and it's sold for its alginate, which is like a compound that is being used in different industries. And basically Chile is the first harvester of wild kelp, but the species is really slow to grow. So it's basically deforestation in the water. So they're taking all this kelp, and it's actually really sad to watch, because then you end up with barren ecosystem where it used to be like a really lush underwater forest, and it's too barren. And basically my dissertation was to look at the alginate, so the compound that it's being harvested for, and looking at how much there is in one kelp and seeing how it varies across seasons to see basically if there's a season that is better for the fishermen to actually harvest the kelp and a season where they could actually leave the kelp to grow. So it was looking at that.
Oh, that's quite good, because it's kind of working alongside people and obviously the restoration of the kelp. That's really interesting. What did you actually find?
Oh, I would have to go back into my...
Oh, no, sorry.
No, I know. Basically, it varies quite, like, there's definitely a season where it's more important, where there's more alginate than others. And I compared to the reproductive season of the kelp, and basically when the kelp is actually reproducing, the alginate is quite low, so it's better to leave the kelp to reproduce.
Yeah,
but you know, it's also, it was quite small scale, so hopefully we're working on making a paper from it, but you know, it's taking time.
Yeah, like science does. was the second placement that you did?
I went to South Africa and I was working in a conservation genetics lab.
Wow.
So
very different.
But all marine.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like a marine conservation genetics lab. So doing all sorts of genetics and genomics analysis with the aim to apply all this information to marine conservation. And so I was just in the lab mainly, to be honest. But it was quite interesting, but really being in the lab all the time. And I think I only spent 3 months there, and it was way too short for me to actually get a really good grasp of what conservation genetics is and how you can, you know, from the sampling to the analysis of the data, it actually takes way more time than 3 months. So I sort of you know, had another look at everything, but didn't get my head quite completely fully into it.
Yeah, I kind of understand that. So how long typically would it take if it was more than 3 months to kind of collect the data, process the data, etc.? How long would that take, do you reckon?
I think 6 months. And okay. I think for Chile, I only spent 4 months there, but I was able to do my dissertation because they kept on collecting data for me. So right. I think if I had a tip really for placement students, is obviously doing more than one is good, but also only doing one that is 3 months long is quite short.
That's really interesting, actually, because a lot of people do take that approach of kind of trying different things to decide where to take their career. But that's an interesting point that I hadn't even considered, that you might want to kind of see a project through and stay for the whole duration.
Yeah, I think more than 3 months is always better to have, to really get, you know, the grasp of the project and what research they do. If you do research as a placement, not necessarily, some people don't.
Did you find that your placement was beneficial to you in terms of your future, and did it help with your degree at all?
It did in many ways. I think it's, you know, taking a step back from university was actually really helpful.
Mm-hmm.
To be like, not going to lectures and not being in this thing where you've, you know, for 2 years you've been constantly doing coursework, learning your lectures, you know, reading papers. And I think taking a step back and being like, and reflecting on the past 2 years, for me it was really helpful to see, you know, what I had done that was not working. So for that it was, and then coming back to third year and being like, right, I know what works for me, I know what doesn't. I think you gain in maturity anyway. So yeah. For that was really helpful. And then, you know, I was almost sure and certain that I was going to do conservation genetics in the future.
Yeah.
And actually doing a small internship in a lab doing this, I was like, actually, I don't want to do this. And I think knowing that you don't want to do something is actually knowing a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a placement well spent, really, isn't it? If you can tick something off, because it's such a varied field, especially if it was something you thought you wanted to do, it's sometimes the reality is very different.
Exactly. So meeting new people, going to new places, I think it's always beneficial in a way. So going on placement year was definitely the highlight of my degree.
That's really interesting. And, you know, even for myself, I find your experiences, hearing about them, very useful, because I'm at the moment alongside all the other second year students trying to figure out whether placement is something I do want to do, don't want to do. So that's a really nice sort of outlook and everything. One question I did want to know was, what do you think was the most challenging part of the degree?
I think it was balancing everything and having a good work and fun balance, because I'm good at working hard and, you know, spending days at the library and learning all my lectures and reading more and, you know, doing all I can to be really good at my degree. But then sometimes it was not beneficial for my mental health.
Yeah.
And I think being able to say to yourself, I can actually take the weekend off and have fun and be out with my friends without worrying about, you know, the work I've got to do, I think it was quite challenging. And I think that's why placement year was really helpful, is because in my second year, my mental health completely dropped because I was constantly working for my degree, and I was, you know, my social life, all the things outside of uni dropped completely. And I think it's really important to keep a really good balance between everything.
No, that is crucial, really, otherwise do burn out quite quickly. Kind of, what else did you do alongside your degree? Obviously you did the podcast, which did really, really well. What other things did you do apart from kind of the socializing aspect of university life?
Yeah, I think from the first day I remember Stacey being like, you have to get out of this degree with more experience than just a degree, and, you know, do some volunteering. And I didn't really know where to start. And So I was part of the Marine Biology Society committee for 2 years. And then I sort of tried to volunteer with different groups. And whether it was in France or in the UK, I always tried to have little projects with my mates. For example, we decided to create this project called Miles for Meadows. And basically, we hiked from Plymouth to Falmouth for 7 days with the aim to raise awareness and money for seagrass restoration.
Yes, I remember that actually. How much money did you end up raising in the end? Because you had a social media campaign and stuff, didn't you?
Yeah, exactly. So I think we raised more than £3,000.
Wow, that's amazing actually. I remember seeing all the updates on the page of you guys, blisters and just
it
tracking.
Was so much fun.
Yeah, it did look it. It looked really hard though, I will say.
It was so much fun. It was such a great way to end up. Because it was in June after uni, basically, after the final year. And it was just such a nice way to sort of wrap it up together. Yeah, then I did like a sort of, it was in French, but I did a seafood guide, like sustainable seafood guide for home with a charity, basically. And we made like this little booklet with, you know, what species, what season, what's the size, what are the different fishing methods. And basically talking about bycatch and how you can avoid it and trying to make it accessible for people to better understand what species they should probably eat and what species they should probably avoid. So I did that during my degree as well.
Just out of curiosity, how do you eat seafood sustainably? What's the best way to do that? It's something I struggle with personally because I really love eating fish, but I know that it's not great for the environment.
I mean, yeah, there's an episode of the podcast in season one where I talk about sustainable fishing, so I would recommend listening to this one because she talks about it way better than I will. But I think it's looking at the fishing method, and you know, obviously bottom trawling is devastating, and also what sort of boats you're talking about, because if you're buying fish from a boat that goes out, you know, 12 hours a day and comes back at night, it's different from eating fish from a super trawler that is 80 meter long and goes for 3 weeks at sea and, you know, just take everything that there is. So obviously the size, I would say, because the bigger, the more chance you have in a way for it to have reproduced. It's really hard because I barely eat fish as well.
Okay, yeah.
But I think season, you know, the season, the time, where it's from, obviously local is better than, and also if you can buy it in, how do you say, I don't know the English word, but you know, basically not at the supermarket.
From kind of local markets, etc., straight off the boat sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And in Plymouth, we know we've got a fishmonger, but that's that, which is really good, but no, not supermarkets, basically.
That's a really cool project to be part of. How did that come about then?
Frustration from talking to my friends that didn't know that eating shrimps were the worst thing you could do.
Yeah.
For those that don't know me, eating shrimps is so bad because either it's being fished, but because they're so small, the nets are really small. The rate of bycatch for shrimp fishing is really high. So for one shrimp, you may find 20 other species. So yeah, shrimp fishing is bad. But then if you eat shrimps that have been farmed, then usually it's mangroves that are being removed at shrimp farms. So then, you know, you're losing mangroves, which are some of the most important ecosystems in the marine environment. So I remember talking to friends and, you know, explaining this and then realizing that actually, even marine biology students, we don't know how to eat fish sustainably. We don't know what fish to eat when. And I was a bit frustrated. So then I was like, maybe I should do a guide. And then I talked to the chair of a charity at home that does like cetacean work. And we were talking about how if you actually want to protect the dolphins that you actually love, then you should maybe look at the fish that you eat, because, you know, the highest death, dolphins are dying because of bycatch. So it's good to want to protect the dolphins, but then you have to look at what fish you eat. So she was like, oh, I wanted to do a guide, but I just don't have really the time. And I was like, cool, let me help you. And then we did it together.
Wow, that's amazing. And it is sometimes opportunities like that do just come about from a conversation.
It's always opportunities. It's only opportunities.
Kind of going back a little bit to the Miles for Meadows, you and your, was it three other friends?
Yeah.
I saw at the time you did lots of kind of promotional videos and social media engagement, and obviously you did the podcast as well. And I don't know, when I started the degree, I never thought that there was so much to kind of conservation work, science, etc. I always just thought, oh, you think scientifically, that's all you need. But how did you go about gaining all of these other skills? Because it's quite difficult if you've just kind of been tunnel vision for so long, I'm just going to do science, and then you get there and it's more than that.
Well, I didn't know either. You know, I came to do my marine biology degree thinking I was going to study and protect humpback whales. You know, it's just, and you come to uni and you're like, oh my God, there's so much more than what I thought there was. And I think it's just about trying and do the things that seem fun to you. For example, I'm not really good at talking to kids, and I've tried. Then
it's a different skill entirely, isn't it?
Completely. And, you know, I think it's about trying the different things and seeing what you actually like, what you don't like, and don't be scared of trying out, like doing the podcast. I had no idea how to make a podcast. And, you know, you told me the same. You were like, I have no idea how to make a podcast. And it's just starting from scratch and just trying out, having fun. What's the worst that can happen is, you know, not enjoying what you do. And that's it. So I think there's definitely more than, you know, research and pure science. But it's also, some people try different things and they want to do pure science. And that's cool. I think it's really important to try all the different things. So if you want to protect the ocean or, you know, marine life, then having a more holistic approach and having tried all the different things, then you know where your skills are.
Absolutely. There's some fabulous words of wisdom, really, ones that I'll be listening to myself. What has your life looked like since Beneath the Surface?
Do you mean how the podcast has changed my life, or what have I been up to?
What have you been up to since the podcast? Okay. After the degree, everything?
Yeah, so I came back to France because in March last year, so almost a year now, I've been working on planning an expedition, a sailing expedition, which I'm setting sail for in 1 week.
That's so crazy. Oh my gosh, I bet you're really excited for that.
I am so excited. But yeah, so I started working on that project while I was finishing uni. So then when I finished uni, I sort of, you know, got fully into planning this project and funding it, but also doing some like bits and bobs, like jobs that are not marine related, just because I have to earn money, and the expedition is completely volunteering. So yeah, I'm planning the Phoenix expedition, basically.
So where are you going on the expedition?
So the expedition is from France to California.
Wow, not up the road then.
So basically we're going south first to Portugal, and then we're going to the Canary Islands, and then we're crossing the Atlantic, we're going to the West Indies, and then we're crossing the Panama Canal, and then we're going up and we're stopping to Costa Rica, Mexico, and we're finishing in San Diego in California. And basically the aim is to, at each of these places, we're going to visit marine restoration projects. So we're going to meet people who are restoring seagrass, corals, mangroves, kelp forests, and oyster reefs. And whether they are a scientist doing it or they're a charity, really like different projects, and trying to spend a bit of time with them so we can understand what they do, help them in the field, but also in other ways, and document and raise awareness about the importance of marine habitats and the importance of restoring them. So yeah, in a nutshell, that's what the Phoenix expedition is.
Yeah, it sounds like you've got a busy few months ahead of you, for sure. What's the part you're looking forward to the most then?
I think for now it's really being at sea and being able to actually just focus on this project, because as I said, it's been voluntary. I started when I was still doing my degree. Now I'm still having a full-time job aside. So it's just being able to, you know, I've been working on it on my laptop for most of the time. So it's actually being at sea and, you know, just sailing all the time. And I'm quite looking forward to this.
Yeah, it sounds something completely different. Have you had much experience at sea apart from kind of field courses and stuff?
No. I mean, basically, I had this idea a few years ago when I came back from my placement. That's, you know, usually the question, what am I going to do after uni? And I was like, I don't really want to go into further postgrad plans and everything. I don't really want to do this. And I really wanted to get into sailing. I didn't really know how to sail. And especially because I think moving around the world by sailing is quite a nice way and, you know, better than flying. So I was like, I want to try to get sailing experience and I want to go into marine restoration because I thought we don't talk enough about the importance of marine habitats. And I think restoration is quite important, more than just conservation. So I had this idea and then, you know, planning everything and, you know, things. I met Pascal, the founder of the expedition. And anyway, things got together and, you know, sometimes life works in a way that you can't really explain. And so from there, I was like, cool, I actually need to get sailing experience. So I asked all my friends that I knew that had boats if I could come on board and help them. And then I did my day skipper in Plymouth and trying to get as much experience as I could. But literally I've been sailing for like a year.
That's crazy. And I'm about. Wow, and you're about to set sail for, you know, 6 months.
Yeah,
that's crazy. Exactly. What's and the it, part oh sorry go on carry on
No, and, you know, it's only four of us in the boat and we all know how to sail. And, you know, I'll be taking that helm and I'll be doing night watches like everybody else. So it's quite crazy.
No, that's mad. It's going to be definitely an experience that you will remember for the rest of your life, I imagine. It's not something that many people can say they've done, for sure. So you're going off on all of these adventures to warmer, more exotic places. But what is it that you will miss about Plymouth? Because you've been living back in France, haven't you, recently?
Yes, I have. And I don't know, because, you know, it sort of feels like I've done my time in Plymouth and, you know, it's good to move out of there. And, you know, I need warm places and I'm quite excited to, you know, go to really warm places.
Oh, yeah, I'm feeling that at the moment. It's a bit chilly over here, I'll tell you now.
Yeah, exactly. So another thing I'll miss the weather. I definitely miss the people. And yeah, you know, with my mate we would always go swimming in the sea, and you know, even in winter, and going up bikini. And even if I do that here in France where the water is not much warmer, I'm not doing it with my mates, so it's not the same. And just being at uni and being surrounded by so many young people that believe the same things that you believe, are doing the best they can, you know, to be honest and, you know, do something for the living world. So I think that's what I will miss the most, is my mates.
Yeah, no, absolutely understandable. You do really meet so many amazing people because you're kind of all on the same page.
Exactly. I've really made the best mates in Plymouth. And so, yeah, I think being at uni and doing something like marine biology, always bond really, really hard with like-minded people. And it's one of the best things about Plymouth. And also the lecturers. Like, I really love the lecturers we had. And I'm so glad I met people like that, that are so passionate about what they do.
Who's the person that inspired you most throughout your time at university?
Oh, wow.
And that's a hard question. So I'll give you a second to think about that one.
I think it was a mate. We were together in first and second year, but then he didn't go into placement year and I went. So when I came back, he had left.
Oh,
so it was a bit, but I mean, that life. His name was Luca. He was German. And I'm so glad I met him at the beginning of the degree because, first of all, he was really, really smart, but also he was really helpful and just incredible at doing so many projects at once and just being like, yeah, let's go on the workshop and let's see this. And outside of uni and just always pushing my limits, and seeing a guy like that, so smart and so passionate about what he was doing, I was like, actually, if he can do it, then I can do it too. And so it was really inspiring to have him aside, especially at the beginning of the degree.
Absolutely. It's really important to surround yourself with people like that. I think that's really special to find in someone.
Completely, yeah.
So I guess one of my last questions is, do you have a long-term plan for your career, kind of beyond the Phoenix expedition?
I try not to, because it changes all the time.
Yeah.
And as we said, like, it's all about opportunities and the people that you meet. And so I can't know what I'm going to be doing because yeah, I know just by Phoenix expedition I'm gonna have so much more experience and I'm gonna meet so many people and I'm going to have way more skills than I have now. So I don't know. What I know is that I'm not sure whether, I don't even know if I'm going to study more, if I'm going to do a master's degree, if one day I'll be doing a PhD. I don't think I want to do pure research. And I don't even know if I want to do marine biology, which can seem a bit weird, but I think obviously I want to stay in something related to the ocean. Like, there's no doubt about this. But maybe if I were to do more studies, I would go into marine social science.
I think that's really important, actually, because I have realized throughout doing the degree, actually, that it's not just as simple as it being marine biology, because it overlaps so much with so many different subjects. You know, economics, chemistry, everything. It's really important, I think.
Exactly. So I'm more like, yeah, I think I'd like to do maybe something like this. For now, after the expedition, basically, I'm not planning on coming back to Europe, because I want warm places and I want to be able to explore some parts of the world that I don't know. So for now, the plan is to, you know, stay in Central America, then maybe set sail across the Pacific. I don't know yet, but I know that I want to involve myself in different projects that are around the ocean and being able to, you know, do something, because it's sometimes quite depressing.
Yeah, it is. It's hard.
Yeah. Oh. So, time would tell. I really don't know.
I'm really excited to kind of see through social media and everything and where you end up and what you end up doing. It's really exciting.
Me too.
So good luck for the Phoenix Expedition. I'll be keeping tabs on the social media pages and everything. I'll also link all of the information about it on the social media page. But just to wrap up the podcast, I wanted to introduce a new thing called Creature of the Week. So how it works, Louise, is I'm going to give you some clues and I want you to try and guess what marine creature I'm talking about.
Okay.
So we'll give it a go.
My skills.
I am a little bit, let's see. So number one, we're talking about a mammal. So not much to go off. I'll be amazed if you can get it.
Like a marine mammal.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Second, it's an omnivore.
All right.
The breeding grounds are in low latitudes and the feeding grounds are in high latitudes.
Okay.
They're found in every ocean in the world.
Okay, that's definitely a whale.
Yeah, we're getting there. Have long white pectoral fins.
Long white pectoral fins. Well, I would say it's a humpback whale.
Yes, well done.
Yay. I mean, it wasn't that hard. It's, you know, favourite animal, so I'm pretty sure that you decided on this.
A little bit, maybe. I was going to say, are you a marine biologist by any chance? Yeah, no, thank you very much, Louise. That was amazing.
Thanks, Lauren, for having me, and I'm really glad you're taking over the podcast and giving it a second life.
Thank you very much for listening to the first episode of the new season. I hope you enjoyed it. It was absolutely amazing to round off Louise's time on the podcast by having a catch up and talking about what she's up to since and her future plans. It really was nice to kind of come full circle with that. All of Louise's social media information will be in the description. Also, all the details about the Phoenix Expedition and a link to the website will also be there if you want to have a look and keep up to date with what Louise is up to. But for now, stay curious, ask questions, try and get outside as much as you can, and just fully immerse yourself in the amazing marine life that we have just here in Plymouth.